C plus 50. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado. As comet viewing parties took place around the world, many of them billed as survival parties, Emma's car pulled up outside Richard Walker's old refuge at Stevenson Farm. The new owner, Phil Norris, knew nothing of the property's major role in the events which had allowed this day to come to pass. He had no idea that without Dan being called to the adjacent cornfield, no direct contact with the messengers would ever have been established, and Comet Conte Abate would now be wreaking apocalyptic havoc on Earth, rather than passing spectacularly overhead at a safe but still astronomically minuscule distance. Everyone was already outside, relaxing on the porch as they gazed up at the incredible view of a once-in-an-epic comet, which was already as close as it was going to get in terms of human perceptibility. Dan's app, which would alert him again 1 minute out and then vocally count down to the precise moment of the comet's perigee, now told him that only 7 minutes remained. "Whoa," Clark said when he caught sight of Emma and her dress. His eyes widened again when Tara stepped out of the car in something less flashy but equally eye-catching, and even Dan looked pretty fetching in his Sunday best. "Well, thanks for telling me we were all dressing up." Dan went inside to grab some drinks for himself, Emma, and Tara. He could hear the TV playing an old classic movie about an incoming asteroid, in keeping with the theme of several stations which had recently gotten into the habit of showing just about every planetary disaster movie ever made. For reasons Dan didn't quite understand, millions of viewers had been oddly keen to tune in for a healthy dose of planet-killing drama. Caitlin Judd, having survived the critical panning of her role in The Fourth Plaque, had already been cast to star in a remake of the most famous impact movie of all, as studio executives banked on the public's appetite lasting beyond the perigee. Il Diavolo would naturally remain easily visible to the naked eye for a few more months as it made its way towards the sun to begin its next 95,000-year orbit, just as it had been visible during the final few months of its approach, so it seemed like a safe bet that the new movie would do well, given that the subject matter would be at the front of everyone's mind whenever they looked up at the stars. "You know what warms my heart?" Emma said a few minutes before the big moment, not leaving a gap for anyone to guess. "Thinking of the welcomers? You know, all those sad creeps who will be cursing under their breath as the comet glides past like a firefly in July? They'll be sitting at home crying into their cornflakes, trying not to look outside while all the cool kids are partying in the streets. I mean, it's not like I'm bitter about them trying to blow me up or anything." Humor was the only way forward, and no one had to force their laughter at Emma's comments. When the final countdown began, everyone stood well clear of the house and looked up at the awe-inspiring galactic wanderer. Clark opted to carry a chair with him and plumped it down next to Henry's wheelchair. Henry noticed this and put a silently appreciative hand on his eldest son's shoulder. The thoughts and feelings the sight evoked in Dan's mind changed by the second. But when the countdown reached 10, his mind shifted elsewhere. At 3, he stepped back deftly enough to evade anyone's notice. When a sound best described as a royal trumpet played through Dan's phone to announce the moment of perigee, Emma glanced to her side and saw that he wasn't there. She then turned around and saw why. There he was, down on one knee, with a ring in his hand. Tara reacted more visibly than Emma when she saw what was going on, hurrying to Emma's side and clasping her hands tightly in excitement. Emma instinctively covered her face with one hand for a brief moment to hide the tears she could feel building, then shook it away. "We made it," Dan said, looking up at the most perfect sight he'd ever seen as the comet passed by over Emma's shoulder and her wide eyes stared right back down at him. "And all I want to do now is spend the rest of my life with you. I know they say that adversity can bring people together, but I also know that what we went through would have driven most people apart. But after nearly 2 years of drama, here we are. Still. I didn't plan to say this much, so I'll stop now and get to the main part. Emma Ford, will you marry me?"
"Dan McCarthy, of course I will," she said, throwing herself on top of him before her mouth closed behind the answer. Mr. Bird started a slow clap while Henry looked on with a tear in his eye. Clark, meanwhile, took another look at the fancy outfit Tara was wearing and pointed a playfully accusing finger at her.
You knew, he said.
Come on, do you really think I would have come here without a full camera crew hiding in the cornfield if I knew he was going to do that? She retorted.
Phil went inside and quickly returned with the expensive champagne, prompting Clark to ask why the hell they'd been drinking the cheap stuff to celebrate the fact that the whole world hadn't been destroyed by a massive comet.
I was keeping the good stuff for a time like this, Phil said. And it's a good job I did.
Toast after toast was made until it became clear that no one would be driving home until the morning. As the night wore on, a gradual and natural division emerged with Henry, Phil, and Mr. Bird ending up on the porch, while the others and their chairs floated around various points from the middle of the driveway to the grass at the edge of the cornfield. Comet Conte Abate still lit up the Colorado sky, looking just as big and just as bright as it had during the beautiful moment when it had stopped getting closer and started getting further away.
I hope everyone made a wish when it went past,
Tara said at one point, loudly enough for both subgroups to hear.
Yup, Mr. Bird called. But remember, it's bad luck to tell anyone what you wished for.
Mine already came true, Emma said.
Ugh, pass me the bucket, Clark groaned with a mocking grin.
Me first, Tara laughed.
I'll tell you what, that dog of yours sure seems to like this place.
Phil Norris yelled from the porch, watching his rooster rolled around in the dirt like he was a puppy again.
It's almost like he's been here before. Dogs just like farms, Henry said. Always have, always will.
Dan saw the subtle grins on the faces around him as Tara, Clark, and Emma shared knowing glances.
Do you think we should tell them?
He asked, his voice low but his tone lighthearted. Emma and Tara shared another look before shaking their heads at the same time.
Nah, man, Clark said, patting Dan on the back as firmly as ever and chuckling through the words. What's life without a few harmless secrets between friends?
This has been an Audible Studios production of Second Contact, Not Alone, Book 2, written by Craig A. Falconer, performed by James Patrick Cronin, executive producers Steve Feldberg and Mike Charzik, producer Chris Sacco, copyright 2018 by Craig A. Falconer, sound recording copyright 2018 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.